Is there anybody within? Hey there!
Jack? Jack!
Oh, Sophie, sweetheart.
Oh, Jack, I'm so glad to have you home.
The Fortune of War by Patrick O'Brien. Dramatized for radio by Roger Daines. Episode 3.
And is it true?
Is there any more bread, my love? Is what true?
That the Shannon took the Chesapeake. There was a rumour this morning by the postman.
Perfectly true, thank God. As neat an action as you could wish. 15 minutes from the first gun to the last. Stephen and Diana and I were aboard.
Dear Stephen, how is he?
Well, still in Portsmouth. There's some difficulty about Diana.
There's always difficulty about Diana.
Well, this is about her being an American. Stephen and I have gone bail for her that she don't wander off. 5,000 apiece.
Do eat some more ham, my darling. You are dreadfully thin.
Which will be damned expensive if she do sling her hook. Not that she will. She and Stephen are to be married at last.
No.
Yes, I was astonished too.
Perhaps it will be for the best.
Well, he has longed for her, you know. These many, many years.
How I hope they may be happy.
I have obliged you in everything, Stephen. Only one glass of wine at dinner, no tobacco at all, not even snuff.
You have been incredibly good, Vinay.
You wouldn't light a cigar, would you, and give me just a waft?
Well, I might. Shall we sit?
Do you have anything of my release?
I'm to London in the morning.
The idea of getting out of this revolting place.
And thence to Paris, to the Institut, to deliver myself of a scientific address.
Oh, light your cigar, for God's sake.
You're looking well. Physically well.
Oh, God, I'm not used to smoke anymore. I cannot live in England, Stephen.
A creature of your social temper.
Tales, Maturin, tales of what happened in India. I can only guess what it will be like when the gossip starts to come back from Nova Scotia.
Inconveniences that you may do away with.
Portsmouth is hard enough now. Imagine London in a few weeks' time. Diana Villiers with a great belly and no husband.
Well, as Mrs. Maturin...
I will be damned to hell before I marry a man when I am in child by another.
You have said so.
You would not rid me of it when I asked you.
No. And you promised.
Then respect my wishes.
Respect mine.
I ordered a fire as soon as ever your message came through. You always were a... chilly mortal.
I must beg your pardon, Sir Joseph, for asking to meet you at your home.
Oh, dear Maturin, not at all. No, please, please, take a seat.
I've been away so long that I no longer know how things go at the Admiralty. I collect there have been many changes.
Some are gone. Some very able new young men have replaced them. Sisyphus has a new face, but the boulder must still be pushed.
Just so. Now, these documents I acquired in Boston...
Ah, welcome home indeed.
Major Beck in Halifax has already dealt with those of local significance, but I flatter myself that some have wider import.
Are these really the private papers of Mr. Henry Johnson?
They are.
My dear Maturin, I am at a loss. I fear that I used up all my superlatives when I wrote to you about your coup on the Leopard.
Oh, you were too kind then, too kind entirely.
Oh, so the letter reached you?
In Java itself.
Then I can only repeat myself. You have done magnificently, sir. Magnificently.
The records are interesting. They chart the progress of a gifted amateur who attains the professional. Mr. Johnson and his American colleagues would seem to have condensed generations of experience into a mere few years.
I shudder to think of the risks you ran to bring these away.
Mr. Johnson is a dangerous opponent. I'm persuaded that he hired the two privateers that waylaid our packet home. They pursued us with an inveteracy that can only be explained by the prospect of enormous gain.
Such a coup, by God.
That was a lucky strike. But I'm not sorry to finish my career with a success, however fortuitous.
What can you mean by finish, Maturin?
Take care of the excrement, Villiers.
Lord, there is so much colour here, Stephen. So much more charm and splendour than drab old England. Such uniforms.
There's a great difference between the full dress that delights the eye here and what they really wear in the muddy, bloody field.
Oh, I could live easily back here again.
In another enemy country, Villiers.
Nobody has ever thought of Paris as an enemy country. We are at war with Bonaparte, not with Paris. And I am an American.
Of course you are, my dear. Do you see there? Rougy Le Coeur. In that house garret, I lodged as a student. Dupuytren lived just below. We used to share our corpses. And now, he's risen to be the Emperor's own physician.
And you, a mere naval surgeon.
He treats Bonaparte's hemorrhoids.
Where are you taking me, Maturin?
To the Faubourg Saint-Germain. I have a friend there who has a vast great palace with no one in it. You are to have one of the upper floors until you're lying in.
You have parcelled up my life without the least reference to me.
You possess many friends here. There's always a great deal going on. I've consulted Baudeloc, certainly the best accoucheur in Europe. You could not be in better hands, my dear.
Could I not?
I am sadly ignorant of midwifery. I should worry for you when there was no cause.
Here is a one. I do not know the handwriting, nor the seal. You?
No.
My hero.
Bad news?
I
suppose that's George again. Never was there such a boy for wanton destruction. George! George! What have you done?
I feel no false shame, my hero. For it shows how entirely I am yours. I have embraced this opportunity of a transport going home to write to you. You will rejoice to hear that our love is ere long to bear fruit.
Christ alive.
I am sure it will be a little girl. I have determined upon Joanna. I should fly to your arms as soon as there is a place in a packet, but I cannot move from Halifax without I pay my debts, which have mounted surprisingly.
£500?
I do hope Mrs. A will prove more understanding than Lady Nelson. But you will suffer no such womanly reproaches from me, my hero. Write at once. I shall sit at the quay every morning awaiting your letter, scanning the horizon like Ariadne.
You did splendidly, Maturin. I could hear every word, and I understood many of them.
Was it not very far from brilliant?
Pray do not be so absurd. Everybody is saying you have a most prodigious mind, and I have known it forever.
I'm not at all used to addressing so large, so distinguished a gathering. But I flatter myself that now we have the reproductive and digestive process of Pezefat solitarius on a sounder basis than heretofore.
My dear, you are exquisite.
Oh, and so are you, Villiers. Upon my word, you are.
I thought I should go the whole hog for your great day. Le porc inentamé.
You are ethereal. A filmy blue wisp of smoke arising.
I shall not be a wisp of anything again for a long, long time. I let some of my pearls go for this dress, you know.
That was well worth it.
I liked my pearls.
But you are truly attached to your diamonds, and you are ravishing in them.
Oh, I love them, passionately. The blue Peter above all. I don't give a damn where it came from. I shall part with my diamonds for nothing on earth. And I shall certainly be buried in them. You will remember that, Stephen, if things go not well this autumn. I am to be buried in them.
You're in the best possible hands, my dear.
May I rely on you?
Certainly you may. Be not afraid. I shall have constant news of you through my friends.
Already, Stephen? I thought you were to stay at least to the end of the month.
I've done what I came to do, my dear. I must be away. And you must pay great attention to Monsieur Baudeloc. If Follow his instructions in every particular. Pregnancy can be a delicate affair. Here's your carriage. And now, listen, Villiers. Listen. Should you ever be questioned about me?
What are you talking about, dear Stephen?
There is nothing between us.
What?
We're old acquaintances. No more. That is what you must say.
Well, then I will.
Oh, my dear, it is a black lie. But you must tell it.
And are you away?
God bless you. Ellie! God bless Diana.
Now, sir, I wish to advert to your late action with the Vaxum hide.
The leopard under my command sank her in latitude 42 south.
I am to ask you, Captain Aubrey, how you can be sure of her identity.
Well, sir, Captain Fielding of the Nymph reported her off Cape Branco, so when we ran into a ship of the line bearing Dutch colours, we naturally assumed that she was the same.
But there being no prisoners, no documentary evidence, the Admiralty has no proof absolute that the vessel in question was the Vaxum Hyde.
Well, many an enemy ship has been destroyed with not a scrap of material evidence, sir. Immemorial custom of the sea, however, has always accepted the log and the unanimous statement of His Majesty's officers.
No, I quite agree, but you will forgive me, sir. In this case, I am to observe that the statement of the Leopard's officers is not quite unanimous.
Grant.
Lieutenant Grant, indeed. You're first on the Leopard.
Does he say I spread rumours that he behaved badly?
Well, he says, just see.
It is completely untrue, Mr. Solent. I distinctly told Admiral Drury in Palau Batang that Grant left the Leopard with my permission, that I was satisfied with his conduct up to that time.
Now he is unemployed.
I went out of my way to tell it.
You do not like the man? Well, Lieutenant Grant has acquainted the department with his impression that what you call the Vaxum Hyde was a Dutch storeship.
A storeship?
Armed on fruit.
Well, the man has run mad.
Well, until he is certified insane, we remain bound by the rules to take notice.
Well, it's monstrous. A storeship. I may not have seen Vaxum Hyde painted on her stern, but by God, I saw her broadside. Aye, and I tasted it too. Does the Admiralty, do you, sir, suggest that a post-captain of my service and seniority not know an enemy 74 when he engages her? It's monstrous.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. And very happy I am to see you, Aubrey.
Good morning, sir.
We were just about to send when we heard that you was already here. That will do, Soames.
Admiral, sir.
That is what I call a coincidence. Aubrey here, already in Whitehorn. Almost makes you believe in crystal gazers, eh, Aubrey?
Almost, sir.
Captain Aubrey.
Good day, Soames.
Sir.
Sit. Now, this is a delicate, pressing piece of work, Aubrey. It calls for a cool, experienced hand.
Sir?
It was suggested that you might not like being offered a sloop, Aubrey, but I said poo.
Poo, sir?
Poo. Aubrey don't top it the Grand Mogul. Aubrey don't stand upon his dignity. Aubrey would take a fishing smack against the enemy so long as there was a gun in it.
Oh, I'm obliged for your good opinion, sir.
But ain't I right, Aubrey?
Sir, but may I ask what sloop?
And Aubrey always goes straight at the point. Ariel. She lies at the Nore. You can post down and catch the morning tide.
Well, time to pick up my dunnage, sir.
Aubrey, this is an urgent business.
A word with my wife?
Heavens, no. Time and tide, Aubrey. I will telegraph Portsmouth. They will tell your wife that you will be back next month with a right feather in your cap.
Thank you, sir. And they do say a feather in the cap is worth two in the bush.
Aye, so they do. Lose not a minute, Aubrey.
Sir.
Thank you.
51 degrees, 26 minutes and 51 seconds north. 0 degrees, 44 minutes and 50 seconds east. Calm, slack water. Course, east by northeast, 5 knots. Gentle breeze. At 7:30, exercise the great guns.
Shall we get in a fourth, Mr. Hyde?
Find your gun!
We can try, sir.
No, 3 is enough. How's your guns?
How's your gun?
That is the Admiralty practice allowance gone for the next 8 months. A creditable exercise, Mr. Hyde.
Thank you, sir.
Come up the sheets half a fathom, Mr. Grimmon.
Hey, Clark! Up the sheets half a fathom, sir!
And belay that slab line.
Aye, sir. Belay the slab line there!
Dr. Maturin.
Here. You lost not a minute before your fireworks, as I perceive.
We shall be a match for anything of our own class, so long as we can get close enough. Good Lord, what have we here?
It is nothing, sir. I feel nothing.
Well, the blood running down your face suggests you do.
Lieutenant Jaliello has struck his head against the low beam there.
The Ariel is an unrated ship. One must always watch out for low beams in such a craft.
I endeavour to remember, sir.
A shocking blow it was, indeed.
Should you care for some grog?
Thank you, no.
And you'll survive, Jaliello.
Could happen to anyone.
I suggest you lie down, allow the wound to close. There'll be no great disfigurement, I'm sure.
I swear he is an unluckier sailor even than you.
He'll mend. He's a cavalry officer, for all love. He expects to be tall and is cut down by a low timber.
I have been saddled with him, Stephen.
Yes, he has supplied us with much invaluable intelligence of the fortress, our destination.
Well, I have enough intelligence to know that I'm in bilgewater up to the neck. As the poor Daphnes would tell us if only they could.
42 pounders, Stephen.
Perched high upon a rock approaching Grimsholm. There was never a trace of the Daphne after. No survivors. Only fishermen's tales.
We are to attempt the reduction of Grimsholm by subtler means than brute force. Mm. Bloodless, even, as I trust. But I perfectly understand your reluctance.
Do you insinuate that I'm not game? Or dare say you mean it as a joke?
Forgive me, Jack.
No. I'm grateful for this scheme of yours, Stephen. If we can capture this island and its fortress, I shall not quibble about the lack of a little bloodshed. Truly. It's right good to be ordered abroad.
Sophie has been worried about your health, you know.
Oh, God. You need not tell me I'm a scrub, Stephen. I know it very well.
You may be a little off-colour, but...
This letter is why the delay over the Vaxenheide is so uncommon awkward. You share in head money and gun money, too. You're pretty nearly the only surviving warrant officer from the Leopard. It is a tidy sum. Mm-hmm.
Do you wish me to comment upon these contents?
Look... I will just say I have sent her all I could.
The lady may be mistaken, Jack.
Do you mean to be kind?
I do not. False pregnancies are by no means rare in women of an hysterical tendency, as Miss...
I do not need to hear her name, Stephen.
Well then, in the case of a true pregnancy, rather better than 12 out of 100 women miscarry.
Hmm.
No? Then you must also consider... There may be no pregnancy.
Well, I think a woman would know of such.
The lady may deceive herself. Or, my dear, the lady may deceive you.
Oh, come, Stephen.
You'd not be the first man to be so cozened.
What a very blackguard thing to say.
I cannot be denied that a demand for money has a sadly untoward appearance.
Look, I know her, Stephen. She may not be very... very wise. She's not capable of that.
She's made no very strenuous efforts to return to you, spite of several packets voyaging to and from Nova Scotia.
I've begged her not to come. Not yet.
But I know her. Mm. Enter in unto her and know her. Jack, brother, I should never say it, did I not suppose there might be some truth in it.
Look, I cannot behave like a thief-taker to a person who has... To such a woman. I should only be so much more the scrub.
Would you say this is a complex vessel, Jack?
What?
With all her masts and ropes and dependent sails. Yet she has nothing to the difficulties of life ashore.
Mr. Jaliello, sir.
Mr. Rawbottom.
Captain's compliments, sir.
And he would like to speak to you when you are at leisure.
Well, I am always at my leisures. I will follow you.
Captain says you are to come down through the lubber's hole, sir.
The lubber?
Lubber's hole, sir. There. The hole cut in the platform. The safe way down.
But you go not that way.
You are to come down safe, sir, if you please.
I really cannot have you wandering aloft like that.
Does the captain believe that I shall fall?
As to that, Mr. Jagiello.
You have fallen into the sea twice.
And I was plucked therefrom twice.
Yeah. You have plunged into the hold through the open hatchway.
Sacks. A heap of empty sacks did preserve me.
And you were very, very nearly destroyed by the mizzen t'gant mast fid. Oh,
Mr. Awkward Moses has given most fulsome apology.
And you begged him off his flogging.
It was an accident, pure.
And how do your fingers today?
A little inconvenience in holding my coffee, Doctor, and in putting on my pea jacket. But your patching up, sir, has been of the best.
Well, sir, it would please me if you would confine yourself to the tops.
Sir?
The lower platforms of the masts.
I shall do as you wish, of course, but, you know, heroes never fall.
Is that so?
Not fatally, at the least.
I was not aware that you were a hero, Mr. Jagiello.
Of course I am a hero, sir. Every man is a hero of his own tale.
There are some eminent exceptions, sure.
And you must have noticed that heroes are never beaten. They may be undone for a while, but they always do themselves up again and marry the virtuous young gentlewoman.
Nick!
What have you, Mr. Rowbottom?
4 knots and 3 fathoms, sir, if you please.
56 degrees, 2 minutes and 4 seconds north, 12 degrees, 40 minutes and 13 seconds east. Off Helsingborg. Course southerly, little more than steerage way.
Mother of God! It's narrower than I'd supposed.
Good morning, Doctor.
And to you, brother. Which is which?
On the shorter larboard walk our allies, the Swedes. Danes on the starboard, the enemy. 3 miles of sea between them and us in the middle.
Have you seen the Eider ducks yet?
The what?
Did not Jagiello promise us Eider ducks in the Sound? You were looking so earnestly.
Do you see those green roofs and terraces to starboard? To starboard, Stephen.
Ah.
That is Elsinore.
Oh. God bless my soul. And yours too, Joy. The very Elsinore. I'd supposed it to be meant... I view it with reverence. Hush, Jack. Do not move. They come. Eiders, without a doubt. Oh, this is a day to mark with a white stone. There's a drake in full dress. He dives. Good God!
That is what I was looking for.
What is it?
Danish mortar fire.
The Goths. They might have hit the birds.
Tolerably good practice.
Ah, these Danes. Always been a shameless people.
They're increasing their charge.
You know, Jack, what they did at Clonmacnoise.
Mr. Hyde, we will carry on down the Sound.
They burned it, the thieves.
Carry on down the Sound it is, sir.
You may shave the Swedish shore as close as you please.
Aye, sir.
Their queen sat on the high altar, mother naked, uttering oracles in a heathen frenzy. It's all of a piece with them.
Mr. Jagiello, good morning to you.
Look at Hamlet's mother.
Good morning, sir.
Doctor, you're most obedient.
The Danes are busy, as you see.
I wish they may burst.
Down with your helm.
Aye, sir.
Were you ever in Elsinore, Mr. Jagiello?
Many a time, sir. I could show you Hamlet's grave from here.
I was really wondering whether they have 10 or 13-inch mortars on the upper terrace.
10 and 13 both, sir.
I should be very happy to see Hamlet's grave as well.
A little to the right, from the furthest turret, sir. Among those trees.
So there he lies. Well, well.
We all must come to it.
Young men will do it, and they come to it by cog. They are to blame. Capital piece.
I doubt I could myself have done much better.
I never laughed so much in my life.
Do you know, I've never classed Hamlet among the comedies. Did you read it recently, I pray?
I've never read it at all. Not right through. But it all ended unhappily, I collect.
So it did, too. The pity of the world.
My
It's been years since we met, Captain Aubrey.
The last time was in July of the year one, sir.
It was.
Just after your splendid victory in the Gut of Gibraltar.
The Lord was good to us that day, unless the Baltic is quiet by comparison and cold.
Allow me to name Dr. Maturin, sir.
Ah, I'm very happy to meet Dr. Maturin.
Admiral Sir James Saumarez.
Your servant, sir.
I've read your communication from the Admiralty, sir. Is Captain Aubrey aware of the nature of your mission?
He is.
The Lord has scattered confusion upon our plans for Grimsholm Island.
How's that, sir?
Your hopes rest upon subverting the Catalan garrison of the fortress there?
They have little love for their French masters, and they are far, far from home.
The most reliable source tells us that the French are preparing to replace them. A force to do precisely that is already on the march through Pomerania.
Then there is little time for deliberation.
And on the mainland, they've started to excavate a new battery that will sweep the Grimsholm approaches.
I suggest that I should be landed on the island as soon as possible. We must risk all at one throw and do so at once.
Stephen,
if I can only get ashore, I feel reasonably confident of success. But I cannot think that a man of war is the best conveyance.
Normal supplies for Grimsholm have been cut off by the French until they replace the garrison.
We may bring Ariel in by ruse or stealth.
Many of the soldiers on the island are sea Catalans. They'd recognize the Ariel at once. Blow her out of the water, whatever her colors or disguise. And then the transports with all our replacement gunners and supplies will instantly be lost.
Do you perhaps have a suitable prize, sir?
No Danish or Danzig vessel, certainly. So many foreigners are licensed to carry trade or naval stores to England. We take very few prizes on the Baltic station.
If I may, sir, we sighted a Dutch brig this morning, the Minnie, on our way into Karlskrona. She made no attempt to escape us, so I make no doubt that she was steering for Riga under your license.
Mm-hmm.
She was heavy, slow, and, I believe, short-handed. Ariel is none of those things.
It might be more scrupulous to wait until one of my cruisers picks up a legal prize.
At this time, sir, a day is a year. If Grimsholm cannot be induced to submit, it will have to be stormed.
Certain deaths of several thousand men.
Hmm. So, I will suspend the license of this unfortunate Dutch brig, and you will seize upon her, Captain Aubrey.
Sir.
God forgive me. But necessity knows no law.
Wind steady, west-northwest. From noon, the people, rested after chase, occupied in loading of the Dutch prize, Minnie, and preparing her for approach to Grimsholm Island.
I have often observed that a gold piece decently proffered may elicit a flood of information untainted by concealed malignity.
Oh, yes.
The Minnie's mate has revealed that his vessel has been illicitly trading supplies with the Grimsholm garrison, and he has a private signal for her approach.
Oh, she's been nowhere near for months, according to her books.
No, but I've been thinking about Artemisia.
If you mean the frigate, she's in the West Indies.
I speak not of a ship, Jack. Lygdamis's daughter, the Queen of Kos.
And what has she got to do with Minnie's private signal, Stephen?
Artemisia took part, as you'll recall, in the ancient Battle of Salamis. Perceiving that the day was lost and pursued by several Athenian ships, she at once attacked a Persian vessel.
There, well, you never can trust a woman at sea.
So that the Athenians, assuming she must be an ally, give over their chase and allowed her to escape.
Very good. I do not perceive your meaning.
There is an analogy here, Jack. Suppose the Minnie were to fly into Grimsholm, all sails abroad, pursued by the Ariel with all guns a-firing.
Well, you tell me, a good many seamen are garrisoned there.
But do you not think that any error would be overlooked in the private signal she was flying? Particularly as it was valid for the Minnie's last visit.
Well, I like your scheme. But Stephen, to convince those seamen, it will have to be played damn well.
I beg pardon, sir, but the men say the Minnie's are lousy. They beg to be excused from exchanging clothes with them.
Well, I'll be complaining next to the weevils, Mr. Hyde.
I made that point, sir, but Wittgenstein, who speaks for them, said weevils were neutral. Natural, I mean. Lice, being one of the plagues of Egypt, were not. They fear for their hair, sir.
They distinguish not between pediculous vestimenti and pediculous capitals.
Oh, that's very apparent, Stephen.
I refer to the body louse and that which infests the hair. The two are quite dissimilar.
The men are extremely unwilling to have to cut off their pigtails, sir.
If they do not put on the Dutchman's hats, they're in no danger.
Call the men aft, Mr. Hyde. We will clap a stopper to their capers. Men, I understand you don't like lice. No more do I. But to get into Grimsholm under the enemy's guns, you have to look like sloppy toads, not like man-o'-war's men. We have urgent business. I'm sorry for it, but it is in the line of duty. Now,
A very learned gentleman has told me that these are but innocent lice. Have no fear for your pigtails. They go only for your body, never your hair. These are pediculo vestimento, and not in any wise pediculo capito. Two quite different kettles of fish. Vestments and caps. And one and fourpence a day extra for each man who plays a minnie's part. Dismiss the hands, Mr. Hyde, and let us carry on.
Dismiss! And to your stations!
55 degrees, 28 minutes and 21 seconds north, 17 degrees, 19 minutes and 31 seconds east. Course, south by southeast. At 11:30, the Minnie's prize crew preparing to chase into Grimsholm.
I have never eaten enough caviar.
It is rum stuff. You're put to sea without stores or loss of a minute, and one must eat what one can take.
It's nearly time.
We must be chasing long before the island sees us. Here is my dear love to you, Stephen.
And to you, brother. Now, before I go aboard the Minnie, if I succeed, I shall hoist the Catalan flag from the fortress. You know the Catalan flag, I'm sure. Well, it's yellow with four bloody stripes down it. If you see it...
When I see it.
Very well. You must bring in the transports, of course. Our gunners must quickly take up the posts vacated by the garrison. The fortress must be secured as soon as may be. But first, Jack, you must come in yourself with Ariel flying the same Catalan flag in some place of honourable distinction.
Yellow Jack with stripes of the spare pennant. I'll have the sailmaker run up half a dozen of them.
Just so. And I beg you'll salute the fortress with all the guns proper for such a place, or even more.
I understand, Catalan cried.
Colonel Dullestrade is the garrison's commanding officer, and my godfather. He's a Catalan nobleman of great valour, who I hope and trust will turn his coat, his men, and his fortress over to us. You're pleased to receive him with all the ceremony due to such a man.
Stephen, if you take this island, I will give your godfather the full 21-gun royal salute.
Ariel, in Grimsholm Bay. Our new captured fortress saluted with 21 guns. Colonel Dullestrade received with all due honours aboard Ariel as supernumerary. The Catalan former garrison being loaded into transports per Admiralty orders, ready for return to their native country.
At once!
You said yourself that the Catalan should be repatriated as soon as may be. Those are my orders from Admiral Samaras, opened as directed once Grimsholm was ours.
But to set sail on a Friday?
I do not believe in omens anymore, Stephen.
After what we've done, I should have looked for a tenor less cold and peremptory. My dear Aubrey, perhaps, rather than this, sir.
They are orders, Stephen.
Coffee service, you ordered up and out.
Good.
Hectoring, tautologist, semi-literate stuff. His Majesty's ship under your command, together with the ships and vessels named in the margin, shall proceed with the utmost diligence to the Bordeaux stream. Does he realise how far that is?
We have to take supplies on the way.
Beg pardon, sir?
Yes, Mr. Hyde.
The transports have hoisted their signals, ready to proceed to sea.
Then make it so, Mr. Hyde.
At once, sir.
On a Friday, and it's the 13th.
Give me the coffee, Killick.
In all matters having to do with the landing of the Spanish troops in Santandero, or passages for the same purpose, you will follow the advice and submit to the judgment of Dr. S. Maturin.
Killick, this coffee has been boiled.
Bollocks, it has.
Spanish troops, forsooth. A man of any spirit would be more inclined to toss S. Maturin into the sea than ask his advice after this pompous fustian.
Sir, may I?
Mr. Jagiello, good morning. Should you care for some infamously boiled coffee?
I will not, sir, I thank you.
You blush, Mr. Jagiello.
The fact of the matter is, I am in possession of an embarrassment. I have found a woman in my bed.
Remarkable. Killick, stop it.
Yes, sir. I found her there just now when I went to my cabin.
What had you been doing all night, Mr. Jagiello?
I've been in the gunroom, Doctor, playing at cards with the Catalan officers. Colonel Dullestrade has given me his note of hand, for I was winning.
Where did she come from?
I do not know, sir. She has the hands of a garrison cook and speaks only a Spanish that I do not know.
Catalan.
Do I surmise that this woman is not wanted on the voyage?
Oh, no, sir. Not at all.
Killick, pass the word for Mr. Fenton. Have him lower down the gig.
Mr. Fenton, gig, how are you, sir?
The lady can cook for His Majesty's garrison, Mr. Jagiello. You must signify to her that she is to be over the side in 2 minutes.
If you please, sir, I would rather not. It will take very long.
Well, there is not a moment to be lost.
It will seem so unkind. Tears, you know, and reclamations.
Well, nevertheless, a man of war is no place for women. And they bring bad luck.
Say you, that believes not in omens anymore.
I never did invite her, upon my honour.
Gigs are ready in, sir. Shall I take Mr. Jagiello to see off the cookie now?
Make it so, Mr. Jagiello.
You need to have a care of the ladies, Mr. Jagiello, and yourself. Oh, you come along you now, sir.
I begged of her to go away, Killick, but she would have my bed, come who may.
That is a very curious thing.
What is?
Jagiello and women.
You cannot understand what they see in him.
Well, he is a good fellow, to be sure. But a boy only. They swarm to him like privateers to bullion. And he runs from them.
Oh, do we not all run from amorous women, Jack, in our season? Even you.
56 degrees, 55 minutes and 42 seconds north. 11 degrees, 25 minutes and 41 seconds east. Heading west, nor-west. Wind southerly, squally rain.
Well, Mr. Hyde, we have not lost the convoy yet.
We shall soon have our proper blow, sir. And I hope it will carry us all clear of Jutland and into the North Sea. You cannot set sail of a Friday the 13th without you have a blow. And a woman on board into the offer? The bargain, I mean?
Well, the glass is dropping.
Even if it were not, sir, a Friday is always a Friday.
I've done with omens. Touch wood. But a falling glass is another kettle of fish. Your glass is scientific.
Sir, by your leave.
What's amiss, Mr. Grimmond?
Very sorry, sir, but I have to report that the timepiece is broke.
Broke?
I dropped it on the deck, sir. And now its works are all aboard, sir, the unluckiest fall that ever was.
Stephen, will you lend me your watch?
Well, you're welcome to it, sure. It's admirably calculated for the taking of a pulse.
Damn thing has happened. The ship's timepiece is broke.
Well, what's wrong with the other chronometers?
There ain't any other chronometers. The Admiralty provides only one, and we sailed in such haste that my own are still at Ashgrove.
Pinchpenny Admiralty. Here, then. You'll be using it for finding the latitude.
Well, to tell you the truth again, Stephen, most seamen rely upon the sextant for latitude. The timekeeper is more for the other thing, east and west.
Of what?
Well, of Greenwich, naturally.
For which the use of a timepiece. There must be a logic in it.
You carry exact Greenwich time abroad with you. Make accurate observations of local noon. Compare the two, and thus you fix your longitude exactly. A well-tempered chronometer is the sweetest thing.
Alas, then, my poor friend.
What?
My severely beautiful Breguet here is set to the time of Karlskrona. Not only that, but it loses a minute or so each day. What would that represent?
In these waters, an error of some 20 miles, increasing each day.
Perhaps we should imitate the ancients and hug the shore.
Well, that would mean running down 1,000 miles of enemy coast to Spain, which I ain't going to.
How then will we steer?
The Oldens found the New World, Stephen, and came back again with no more than lead, latitude and lookout. All will be well, I promise you.
Breakers under the lee! On deck there! Breakers under the lee!
What? We should have 200 miles of sea room.
White water, sir. Broad on the starboard. On the larboard beam.
Hands about ship! North, northwest!
Hands about ship!
Hands about ship!
How strangely the floor is sloping. I can sit hardly in my chair. What do you suppose they are about?
I cannot tell. When the tempest roars, the passenger is a mere helpless parcel.
Does not Captain Aubrey seek your advice in such times?
Not always.
Breakers ahead! Breakers dead ahead!
Fill the main course! 1 point to starboard!
Fill the main course!
By the mark three! By the mark three!
On the deck! Down on the deck!
Is this the end of all, Doctor?
To
a cavalryman it may appear so, Mr. Jagello, but Captain Aubrey and I have been shipwrecked many and many a time. Nearly always do we survive the experience. Seamen do love to die drunk if they're not prevented.
What have we come to, Doctor?
Well, it's either France or England. I should say it must be France.
Colours to a whip in the Lord's shrouds, Mr. Hyde!
Colours to the shroud, Leon, sir!
Oh, I hate being fired up from the shore. Cast quick, Bridges! Cast well ahead!
Aye, sir!
Mr. Hyde!
Sir!
Let the sheet anchor be cleared away! Haul up a point! Mr. Grimmer!
Oh, well, below, sir! A couple of feet in the forepeak!
Thank you, Mr. Grimmer. Don't signify. Aerials! Aerials! I know where we are, and it is worse than I thought. But we are going about Club Hall. With God's help, we have already passed two reefs and countless rocks. We will weather Gripe's Point and ride snug in the bay. A mistake, and we drive upon the rocks. Every man is to obey the word on the instant, and we will have the last laugh of these French guns.
Fire fast there.
Fire the mark. Fire.
That point is very close.
Bridges, fetch a cast far out. Far off, do you hear me?
Far off! Aye, sir!
Oh!
My God! Sir! Sir!
Starboard! Oh! I mean, starboard!
I refuse to believe, Captain Aubrey, that all of your officers, save one, are descended from your Queen Anne.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you that Queen Anne is dead, sir. Common decency, therefore, forbids me to make any comment.
In 20 years of this war, Captain, a number, many, of Royal Navy ships have been wrecked on our Brittany coast. We are habituated to the drawing of correct official lists of prisoners, but your men, to my opinion, have replied to our commissary's questions with culpable levity.
The commissary, sir, is a civilian.
But a servant of the Emperor, sir. He is deserving of more proper respect than claims to parentage such as Guy of Warwick, Creeping Jenny, or Sir Julius Caesar.
Oh, I know Sir Julius. We share a club.
It may prove some time before you renew your acquaintance with that gentleman.
I dare say. Since your Emperor refuses to exchange prisoners in the traditional way, sir, I shall look forward to being your guest until the war's end. Let us hope it be not so long delayed that I wear out my welcome.
As for escape, the great thing is money.
Then we are fortunate that our ship was not taken, no enemy has pillaged us.
Next, a compass and a map, if you can have it.
Had you a map, Mr. Hyde?
Not for my second escape, sir. Cold, wet, and expensive, that was.
You walked to the Adriatic? All that way?
With three other midshipmen, yes.
I shake the hand of a hero, Mr. Hyde.
I beg your pardon, sirs, but there is here a young person for Monsieur Jagged Yellow.
Ah, I do beg your pardon, gentlemen.
Delicacies in a little basket, I shouldn't wonder.
Killick, that will do.
My dear mademoiselle.
I have bring food. It is for you, sir.
You will find money can do almost anything.
But, my dear, dear mademoiselle, I asked quite simply for sausage and apples, not more.
With my own hands, for you I make this.
There you are again, doctor. Where am I again?
But foie gras, here is lobster, strawberry tart.
You have need of all your force, sir.
Yesterday she bought a thundering great patty with truffles.
And a bottle.
I am sure it is all wonderfully good, mademoiselle, my dear. But you bring much more than I could ever afford.
You may pay me for later, or in some different manner. How you may like.
Tomorrow we shall see a wedding cake for his pudding.
But how? By note of hand?
If you please, sir, I will bring you to the entrance.
Sirs, my excuses.
What they see in him, I cannot conceive. Look at Fenton. Shaves twice a day, side whiskers the pride of the service, strong as a horse and a very fair seaman. But no, no patties for Fenton, just for that boy.
Not Verdun.
I have my orders, sir.
But is Verdun not where prisoners of war are kept?
Your responses to our questions have not been satisfactory.
Then where are we to go, sir?
Admiral, I have produced my King's Commission. I have stated the number of the Ariel's crew. By the laws of war, no captured officer is required to do more.
You are to proceed to Paris for further inquiries. Mount.
Guarded by a whole troop of horse.
Are you the gentleman who was recently invited to a gathering in Paris by the Emperor's own physician?
I regret I cannot satisfy you, sir. My reply must be the same as Captain Aubrey.
And mine also.
I wish you good day, then.
Oh, and a good day to you, sir.
And the most pleasant journey possible. Fermé! Allez! En avant!
Dr. Maturin, we know perfectly well who and what you are.
Well, as to that, sir, I am an officer who is a prisoner of war.
Oh, you were not a prisoner of war when you were last in Paris, nor were you here in the character of an officer.
You must forgive me, Major.
You are a linguist, Dr. Maturin. I dare say you speak the various dialects of Spanish. For example, Catalan?
I do not find the question falls within the limits of what may be put to an officer who is a prisoner of war.
Your reluctance to answer is significant. It amounts to a denial.
Well, on the same basis, you may state that I know Basque or Sanskrit.
Were you in the Baltic aboard the Ariel?
You will have read the ship's books.
Oh, your name is not in the muster roll.
You're mistaken.
The aerial surgeon was a Mr. Graham.
My name is on the supplementary list as a passenger. Born for victuals, but not pay nor tobacco.
As a spy.
So that is why we are here.
It is unnatural to me to be up so high.
But the tops of a man of war.
All the prisons I've been in thus far have been underground, Jagello. Whereas the Corsi Tower of the decrepit old temple.
It's here they kill poor Wright in the year 5.
Here the king was imprisoned, and most of his family.
They will not guillotine us.
No, no. Wright was only a commander, not a post-captain.
And I am not unknown in the scientific world. Dictatorships are absurdly sensitive to the very public opinion they so continually outrage. So long as it is known that we are here.
And how should that be?
That's the simplest thing. One of you shall have the dysentery.
Oh.
I shall find myself in need of a prescribed bolus. There was never in the world such a talkative, intermarried, clannish band as the physicians of Paris. Thus shall our presence here become known.
That is a fine scheme.
And there'll be so much the less likelihood of our being quietly shuffled off.
Dr. Maturin, how comes it that the lady should be offering the equivalent of at least a million for your release, huh?
I am unable to say.
Oh. You maintain that neither you nor she is a political agent?
Major, can you conceive of any such agent yet weaned who might be capable of so enormous a folly?
Well, then what is your explanation for Madame Villiers' attempt at bargaining?
Only an insufferable coxcomb would reply to that question, sir. Well.
It cannot be that such a lady would be enamored of your person.
It is improbable, I must confess, but history teems with even less eligible companions.
Oh. Was it your baby that she lost? Oh, you did not know. The old lady will not save you, Dr. Maturin. I will present you with a witness to what you have done.
You have already produced a number of mediocre paid informants, sir. I've grown tired of them, too.
Ah. You are not tired of this gentleman. He is an American, and he knows you very well.
That is the man. I name Stephen Maturin, the thief, the murderer, and the spy.
Henry Johnson is in Paris, Jack. He has identified me.
Jagiello and I have been working at loosing the cross stones of the privy.
Would it be possible to expedite the matter at all?
If I had some snatch blocks. But Jagiello's latest sweetheart has only given us some poor landsman's pulleys.
Who is this man Johnson, Doctor?
He is an American gentleman. He believes I have appropriated some items precious to him. Amongst them, his woman, her jewelry from him, a diamond of very great price, and his child.
He must have a hate of you.
The bitterest, the most malign.
That he crossed the ocean so to revenge himself.
Messieurs, good evening.
Jack, do not bother. Good evening, gentlemen. Pray walk in.
We are come to take you, Dr. Maturin.
Jack, I beg you. Very well. My companions?
Le capitaine Aubry, le jeune Napoleon.
Just so.
Certainement. They are to come with you.
And let us go. Should we go below, sir?
Well, Captain Babington, I believe I shall take the free air of Calais for a while, if you will permit me your quarter-deck.
God, yes, man.
With the greatest of pleasure, sir. And give you joy of your escape.
Give you joy of the Oedipus, William. She is a fine command.
Thank you, sir.
What an obstinate, pig-headed brute you are, upon my honour.
I've been trying to get it into your thick head this hour at least, William.
And good manners.
Hammer and goddamn tongs. They might have been married this 12 months or more.
They are married, then?
No. Figure of speech only.
Dear me.
Johnson is in Paris. The English ports are closed. He was an enemy alien. And I cost you the Blue Peter.
Be down to the necklace. That bitch of a Talleyrand may have it and welcome.
But you loved it.
You will be my diamond, Stephen. There, I have said it.
Mr. Somerville, I believe we may set to Gantz.
Gantz it is, sir.
Lay aloft! Lay aloft there!
Oh, Mrs. Villiers. How delightful to see you, ma'am.
Mr. Babington. Captain Babington, my dear sir.
Cousin Diana, I am so grateful. Proud. Oh, so proud to call you kin. As proud as Lucifer upon my soul.
So you know, Jack.
But you gave up your great diamond for our release. Damn my soul, if that ain't handsome. God bless you for it, my dear.
Captain Babington.
Lord Doctor, how very welcome you are.
My dear, when do you expect to be in Dover?
With this breeze and tide, 2 hours or three, no more.
Then there's not a moment to be lost. I have a service to beg.
Well, I shall be only too happy. Whatever it is, delighted.
I desire you to marry us.
Do you hesitate, Captain Babington? Is it my reputation? I think I may marry as well as an Amanda Smith. Nay, better.
Miss Smith is married?
To a great beefy hulk of a marine captain.
Oh, Lord.
You seem happy at the news.
Not I. Not in especial. I wish them joy, of course.
Oh, my hero.
What is this I hear? You marry Dr. Maturin, my friend, sir?
Why, yes, I do.
William, do you know the drill?
Did you not teach your midshipman, sir? Always be prepared for the unexpected.
Why, so I did.
Pass the word for my clerk. A prayer book. And
Break out the champagne!
In The Fortune of War by Patrick O'Brien, dramatized for radio by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb, Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane, Diana Villiers, Candida Benson, Lieutenant Jagiello, Tom Court, Lieutenant Cornelius Hyde, Carl Prekop, Henry Johnson, Struan Roger, Preserved Killick, John Glover, Barrett Bonden, Sam Dale, Major Jean-Charles Clapier, Stephen Hogan, Admiral Dommett, Tony Turner, Captain Babington, Don Gillet, Sophie Aubrey, Jeanette Percival, Amanda Smith, Emma Handy, and Rowbottom by Liam Lau Fernandez. All other parts were played by the cast. The Fortune of War was a BBC Scotland production directed by Bruce Young.
The news is next this afternoon.